The Truth News Network. Identity politics is poisoning the American well of freedom.
There is an antidote.
It's right here at TNN. Truth News Network. For today's chapter, here's Dan Newman.
Welcome to TNN, the Truth News Network. Hello, everyone. I'm Dan Newman. I'm really glad you joined us here today. We're having a discussion about the famous IST word and some derivatives of that word and its usage. Of course, the word is racist. How often during the last decade have you heard the use of the term racist or a derivative of it, race card? How often have you used those terms? Have you spent any time considering its meaning and its purposes for use? Like it or not, agree with it or not, accept it or not, that term and its derivatives actually define the parameters for the state of dispute and chaos in which the United States of America finds itself entrenched. Some will argue that our 20th century parents and grandparents did not spend much time thinking about discussing race, equality, inequality, the social and political structure of racial divide in America, or what things should or should not be done to change political policy regarding racial issues. From time to time, social and political events that popped up forced Americans to think through racial issues, mostly to simply try to find understanding for their varied racial issues that showed themselves in public. Otherwise, it seemed that the handling of those were more often than not done at home, in a closed-door meeting with a boss, or under extreme circumstances, in the street. Unfortunately, those street confrontations received most of the attention. Do not for any one moment think the story in any way diminishes the existence of or the necessity to deal with any and all issues in our nation regarding race that are daily escalating with little or no resolution on the horizon. Americans must tackle these problems. But just like addressing and other problems in our personal, business, or social lives, we must first define the problem before possible resolutions can be identified or discussed, looking for ultimate resolution. So how do we do that? In 1980, candidate Reagan asked the American people a question that is now iconic political history. We've talked about it in the recent midterm elections. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Reagan knew the answer, and he knew that the overwhelming majority of Americans had an opinion about the right answer. Politicians of all stripes have tried repeatedly to recreate that stark black and white choice. As is often the case, the power of an original line is lost when the moment in time is no longer right for the message. The message, Reagan's message, is again right. America has a problem with race relations. It's a human problem flamed by profiteers who gain from division, either politically or economically, or sometimes both. It is not simply an American problem. Make no mistake, however. In a country where we once held blacks as property, placed them in chains, and subjugated them under the law, the stain of racism is on our soul and is still part of our modern culture. We are not born racist. We teach racism and pass it on and are passing it down. Do we want to fix racism in this country? You bet we do. The overwhelming majority of Americans want it gone, and our government and numerous groups have fought from broadly different perspectives to combat it. The fight has ebbed and flowed, and we have found some success and some complete failures. Indeed, we cannot even agree on what racism is. let alone how to wipe it from our culture. But on this one thing we must agree. Race relations in America are worse now than they were 8 years ago. This is not to say that President Obama was the cause of poor race relations or that President Trump is the cause of poor race relations. It is to say that Obama's prescriptions for combating racial injustice did not help, and his leadership on the issue served to fan the flames of racial mistrust. I promise you, that was not his intention, as some folks truly believe. Mr. Obama grew up in Black America. His view was profoundly different from that of those who did not. And as president, he had a passion to expose racism and problems he had seen, fought, and perceived for decades. His had been a life of racial grievance fighting the man. Then he was elected and became the man. His fight became all about exposing the world as he saw it. Was he wrong for that? We judge intelligent-sounding public policy based on outcomes, not intentions. Mr. Obama made race relations worse, even if he was only wrong for all the right reasons. Racism is real in America. And recently, Newt Gingrich, in discussing escalating racial issues during the Trump administration, told white Americans that they could never really know what it was like to grow up black in America. You know what? He's right. Dead right. Likewise, for many minorities, they don't know what it's like to grow up white in America. Whiteness is not a ticket to success, nor is it a path paved by privilege. Every individual in this country has hurdles, and the absence of color surely removes one hurdle for non-minorities. Racism in America is worse, not because white people are becoming more and more racist. Racism in America is getting worse because we are counting and dividing by race. We are promoting and hiring based on race. We are suing and being sued based on race. We are admitting and denying based on race. Even that bastion of racial equality among Ivy League universities, Harvard. We are selling and buying distrust from our leaders, even in some churches and family members, based on race. With that distrust, we are accepting the false narrative that all whites are racist, that they have unchecked privilege, and that they seek to oppress, deny, and punish blacks for being black. Whites look at staggering black crime rates, gun violence, and anti-white militancy, and they too fall prey to the false narrative that blacks pose a higher risk of being a threat just because they are black. Who can stop it? Not this old white guy. All of this happens when the emphasis of our leaders and our public policy is on our color rather than the content of our character or the measure of our accomplishments. We cannot and we will not succeed in a war on racism until we stop making and selling assumptions based on race, no matter our race. The best way to attack this problem is to move to a race-neutral society where the government does not divide us by race. It's hard to build the United States in a country where we divide each other socially, academically, or legally based on color. We cannot be a United States when we demonize each other, attack the necessary fundamentals of civil society, and assume and sell the concept that law enforcement and the justice system are designed to oppress people of color. They are not. Yes, racism exists in America. It's live and thriving. However, in a country where the last president was black, and Virginia, Ohio, and California are states he overwhelmingly won, we know that color is thankfully not the sole measure of a man by reasonable, responsible people. What we need now is to have more reasonable, responsible, color-neutral people, governments, and organizations. Here is what is true. If you dislike or distrust someone because of the color of his or her skin, no matter what color their skin is, you may have a propensity to be racist, irrespective of the color of your skin. I'm going to repeat that. If you dislike or distrust someone because of the color of his or her skin, no matter what color they are, you may have a propensity to be racist, irrespective of the color of your skin. The success of America is based on a real simple formula that works across any color boundary. Get an education. Get and stay married. Raise your kids in a loving family to respect people, irrespective of color or faith. Promote education and encourage civic activism and volunteerism in your local community. Get involved, and get involved with people that aren't just like you. When we do those things, we'll change our society. If, however, we continue down a path of broken families, broken communities, race baiting, racial profiteering, and distrust, there will be no united in our states. The answer is black and white, but it starts one household at a time, black and white. So, how can we start that change? Academy Award recipient Denzel Washington chimed in on that topic, the topic of racism and what Americans must do to tackle it. Denzel is speaking to a reporter who asked him how he thinks race relationships are in America. And Denzel responded this way, quote, "Relationships have to do with race relationships. You're white," he's talking to the reporter, "or whatever you are, and I'm black, or whatever I am. And we're standing here talking now. That's how we get things done. You can't legislate love. The President of the United States cannot legislate us into liking each other. We have to step forward and ask questions about each other and engage. There's no law that says, because I'm president, you all got to get along now. So it's up to us." End quote. It sounds fairly simple, and it seems pretty easy for the Oscar winner, Denzel Washington, to reach out to the other side to open lines of communication to discuss all things pertaining to race. It's another thing for everyday folks who live in middle America to get started in that process, especially when every day it becomes more and more obvious to Americans that the nation seems to daily grow more and more racially divided. A recent poll finds that most Americans believe race relations in this country are really bad. More than half of whites think so, and more than two-thirds of blacks. Even more troubling, 40% of blacks and whites believe race relations are getting worse. One possible reason? The poll found big majorities, 60% of whites, 71% of blacks, believe most Americans are uncomfortable discussing race with someone of another race. One group is helping blacks and whites break down the racial wall by breaking bread together. It starts out like any dinner party, but then a difficult conversation begins. "Blacks don't trust white people by and large," said Linda, who's a black woman. "And whether you think it's based on history is irrelevant. I didn't have black friends," Curtis, a white man, said. "A couple of acquaintances, but never had them in our home. Never us in their home." This group calls themselves Chattanooga Connected, a group of blacks and whites who meet once a month to have dinner and talk openly about race. They were brought together by 75-year-old Franklin McCallie, a son of privilege whose family name is seen everywhere in town. He said he was raised to believe in the South's segregationist order. "I've used the N-word and I told some N-jokes," McCallie says. "They were less. They lived in less homes. They got off the street. They said, sir, to me as a young man." But in college, a conversation with a black student from a nearby African-American school changed everything. McCallie continued. He said, "You know where we eat lunch? My uncles and I, who fought in World War II for freedom and justice in the pursuit of happiness." McCallie recalls becoming emotional. "We get on a bus and ride 2 miles out of town to eat lunch because none of the stores we shop in will let us eat." Curtis Baggett said the conversations around the dinner table can get uncomfortable, but that's a good thing. "I think it's liberating," Baggett says. "It was so freeing for the first time in my life to have a black man tell me what it really felt like to be walking around a grocery store, a mini mart, and have the owner of the mini mart follow him up and down the aisles because he didn't trust him. I've never thought of that before." McCallie acknowledges that the dinner parties aren't likely to end racism in America, but they're a start. There it is, folks, a start. "If it all stops at this house, it wouldn't do that much more," McCallie says. "It's got to go other places. People finally seeing each other by talking face to face." You know, one thing is very obvious to me. People of different races and different color have varying differences, come from varying circumstances, and therefore have varying perspectives. I, as a Christian, feel strongly, as hard as it may be, it is more important than hard for us to find ways to open discourse with each other being white folks in my case, and black folks. Black people need to open discourse with white people. The Chattanooga connected example of doing so, it may seem simple to you, may even seem silly, but you know what? It illustrates one very important element in any racial reconciliation process that has to exist. Honest effort to communicate with the other side to honestly find similarities, differences, develop sincere plans together, and even a timeline to push for common goals and objectives. And let me say this, I'm not stupid. I know it's not easy. I know it's very difficult. Generations of racism are sticking us in the same merry-go-round, but we've got to find a way to get off. People are dying. Children are dying. Babies are dying for no other reason than the hatred that comes from racism, and much of it has a history of not even knowing where or why it began. In one of the best racial movies of all time, A Time to Kill, Carl Lee, in his jail cell, after shooting two men who had raped, brutally abused his little girl, threw her body off a bridge, not thinking she would live. She did. In his jail cell, talking to his attorney, Carl Lee had a problem. And he discussed it with his attorney. Listen in.
"Chick, I can't do no life in prison. You got to get me off. Now, if it's you on trial..."
"It's not me. We're not the same, Carly. The jury has to identify with the defendant. They see you, they see a yard worker, they see me, they see an attorney. I live in town, you live on the hill."
"Well, you white and I'm black. CJ, you think just like them. That's why I picked you. You one of them, don't you see? Oh, you think you ain't because you eating clothes and you out there trying to get me off on TV talking about black and white. But fact is, you just like all the rest of them. When you look at me, you don't see a man. You see a black man.
Carly, I am your friend.
We ain't no friends, Jake. We on different sides of the line. I ain't never seen you in my part of town. I bet you don't even know where I live. Our daughters, Jake, they ain't never gonna play together.
What are you talking about?
America is a war, and you on the other side. How a black man ever gonna get a fair trial with the enemy on the bench in the jury box? My life in white hands. You, Jake, that's how. You my secret weapon, cause you one of the bad guys. You don't mean to be, but you are. It's how you was raised. Nigger, Negro, Black, African American, no matter how you see me as different. You see me like that jury sees me. You are them.
You know what? Carl Lee is right. If you're a black man, you look across the way and you see a white man, I am them. And if I'm a white man and I look across the way and I see a black man, he is them. We've got to find a way to bridge that divide. And it begins, as Denzel Washington said, by communicating. By sitting down like the folks in the Chattanooga Connection and talking to each other, not at each other. We got to find a place to start. We have to start somewhere. We cannot let the nation continue to implode because we're racist. We're not. Racism is here. We've got to tackle it, and we must tackle it together. Hey, folks, thanks for joining us today here at the Truth News Network. It was a tough one. Sometimes they are. Sometimes the truth really hurts. But you know what? Remember this. You're always going to hear the truth at TNN, the Truth News Network. So long, everybody. Have a great day.
Not just political, not just lifestyle, but always relevant.
Real truth, real news. TNN, the Truth News Network.